chapter, Krishna concludes by describing how, what need is there for all this description, because just by my one fragment, I am manifesting the, I am sustaining the whole universe. So that becomes the seed for the question which Arjuna will ask. Arjuna will glorify Krishna and ask him, please show me how you sustain the whole universe. So this is the overview of the chapter. In the outline point of view, it is very straightforward. So, first Arjuna makes a request and Krishna says, yes, I will reveal this form to you, and he describes the form briefly. And then, here we see that there is a description of the form by three people. First Krishna describes what he is going to show Arjuna. And after that, Sanjay describes to Yudhishthira, to Dhritarashtra, what Arjuna saw. And to some extent he also describes what was Arjuna's reaction. And then, after that Krishna gives some instructions to Arjuna, and Arjuna asks a question. And then after receiving those instructions, Arjuna offers prayers, in which also again he describes the universal form a little bit. And finally, Krishna speaks about the glory of pure devotional service, pure devotion. So this is the way, you can note it down if you want.
Sorry?
Revealing his universal form and describing what he will reveal in response to Arjuna's request. Then Sanjay describes to Yudhishthira what Arjuna saw. And after that, Krishna gives his instructions. This is also included in Sanjay's description, but it's not a description, it's a narration now. And then Arjuna offers his prayers. And after Arjuna offers his prayers, then Krishna speaks to Arjuna. His glorification of pure devotional service, glorification of universal form and glorification of bhakti, which reveals everything including the universal form. Become an instrument. This is more or less similar to what we have seen in the last section. And incorporated into the title for the last section. So, I have a PowerPoint of the universal form, which we will see a little later. And that PowerPoint is mostly about the Vishwarup as it is described in the Bhagavatam. The two are similar. So, we will discuss about that. Let's read a few verses. अर्जुनवाच मदनुग्रहाय परमं यमात्मात्मसंहितं यत्स्वयक्तो वचस्तेन मोहोऽयं विगतो मम It's interesting, Arjuna is saying what he will say at the end. When he was in Ashto Moho Smritir Labdhva, same thing he's saying, Moho ya Vigato Mama, my illusion is already gone. So Prabhupada explains that after Arjuna spoke in 10.12 to 18, that time Arjuna is already enlightened. Now whatever after that Arjuna asked, that is for Loka Hitam Virupa, for the benefit of other Jiva. And Prabhupada also described that this Vishwarupa is asking to show, so that people in the future who claim to be God, there will be a benchmark for evaluating them. It's not that Arjuna is having any doubts, but Arjuna wants to set a standard for this purpose. Translation, second verse. So appearance and disappearance of all living entities means, for example, Krishna says here that Dhanam Bijam Obeyam, he says that in the 7th chapter, and the intelligent special seed of all creation, and that I am the rest of all creation, he describes that. And Mahatmyam Vicha Obeyam, your inexhaustible glory, specifically Jagrat Kuala explains, this refers to Avyaya is what? That how you are not affected by the all this creation and destruction. As I described in 9.9, Udasina Vadasina Saptateshu Karmas. So that means Krishna, Arjuna is juxtaposing. Juxtaposing means putting side by side the temporary nature of everything in the material world and the eternal nature of the Lord. He says, I have seen both based on what you have described. I have understood both now. And then what? Evam etad yatha tattvam atmanam parameshvara drashtum icchami te rupam aishwaryam purushottamam.
For the test of all personalities, for supreme power, do I see you here for me? As you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into the Krishna manifestation. I want to see that power of yours.
So this is referring to 10.42. Athava vahunetena kim jyatena tavata ishtabhyaham idam krishnam. Ishtabhyaham idam is this cosmic krishnam. Ekam shena stito jagat. I have entered by one amsha into this cosmos. So what is that one amsha? We have that hierarchy starting from Krishna down to Balaram, then the Chaturviva, then we have Narayan. All of you know that, isn't it? Then second Chaturviva. And then, let me show that. We have this hierarchy. So from Krishna comes Balaram, from him Chaturviva, from him is Narayan, from him the second Chaturviva. From him there is Mahavishnu, Garbhodaksha Vishnu and Shivadaksha Vishnu. Now all three of them are considered Paramatma. All the three Vishnus are considered Paramatma. So Mahavishnu is the Paramatma of the Mahatattva. Garbhodaksha Vishnu is the Paramatma of the Brahmanda. And Shivadaksha Vishnu is the Paramatma of the living entities body. So in that case, wherever there is organization of matter, at whatever level, there is a super soul pervading over there. So ekam shena stito jagat, here he refers to this whole universe is pervaded by Garbhodaksha Vishnu, by one fragment of mind. So after describing this, Arjuna goes forward. So now very nice words. Manyase yadi tat shakyam maya drashtu mitri prabho yogeshwara tato me tvam darshayatmanam avyayam.
If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystery powers, then kindly show me that unlimited universal self.
Yes, kindly show me unlimited universal self. So in the early days of our movement, after the movement started, Sai Guru Prabhu was one of the earliest devotees who had joined. So at that time, the idea of following four regulative principles was radical, revolutionary. And they expected some miraculous results by following four regulative principles. So, you know, for them four regulative principles was almost like sannyas. It's a huge demand for them. So one day, after 6 months of practice, he went to Prabhupada and he told Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I have been chanting 15 rounds and following four regulative for 6 months. But still I have not seen Krishna. Still I have not seen Krishna." So Prabhupada looked at him and smiled. Prabhupada was working on his Bhagavad Gita. So he turned it around and pointed it. Read this. And he read this. No, he couldn't understand anything. There was some dazzling description. So he read it again. And he read it. How is this related to my question? Read it again loudly. So it was this verse. "If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord," and then he struck him. "If you think that I am able to behold your form." So, and then he smiled and he understood what Prabhupada was saying. So then Krishna said, you know, Arjuna was the intimate associate of the Lord in the pure devotee. But still he is saying, he is depending on Krishna saying, "If you think that I can behold your form." But that is the mood of a devotee. So then Hegel too understood. So actually, Arjuna is not thinking that I am qualified. He show me this. Prabhupada writes in one Bhagavatam purport. So different context but same principle. That a devotee always desires to see the Lord but never demands to see the Lord. If the desire is not there, there is no devotion. But if the demand is there, again there is no devotion. Because demand will mean we are trying to make an order supply. So a devotee desires but does not demand. So he is requesting over here. He says, "If you think it is possible, then please allow me to show this for you." And Chakravarti Pal explains that he is using the word Yogeshwara here. Oh Lord of mystic power, he says, Arjuna is indirectly implying that I know that I am Ayogya. So because you are Yogeshwara, you can give me the Yogyata. So you can make me Yogya. So Yoga means to connect and Yogya means worthy of connecting. You are the Lord of Yoga, so you can make me worthy of being connected. So please, grant me this vision. And then Krishna readily agrees. Translation. So, Krishna starts describing to Arjuna, just like, you know, if you want to show something very exciting, then you create anticipation. So, you know, suppose some devotee has come to our temple and we want to show him our temple. He says, "Your temple is so beautiful. You know, we have got this around it, and there's a hill in the background, and there's a lake behind." While you're going towards it, you're creating anticipation. So Krishna is not yet revealing, "This is what you're going to see. See. We will describe it. It's creating anticipation in Arjuna's heart." Translation.
"O Blessed Bharata, see here the different manifestations of Aditya, Vasu, Rudra, Ashwini Kumar, and all other demigods. Beyond the very wonderful things which no one has ever seen on the heart of people."
Yeah, so he's describing here. Adrushta Purvani. Adrushta Purvani means never seen before. So, now let's see how many times, on which occasions, did Krishna display the universal form? Yeah? Duryodhana was one. Mother Yashoda. Okay. That's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, as Krishna. Okay, Raja. Now, in all the situations, the Vishwarupa was not the same. What was displayed on all occasions are not the same. There are differences. See, the term Vishwarupa is a generic term and it implies many things. So, now Vishwarupa, can be Ishwar as the Rupa of the Lord. Universal form can be universe as the form of the Lord. Or universal form can be the form which contains the universe. Universal form. Both are similar, but there is some difference. That means now when he showed Yashodamai, what did he show? His own form which contained the universe. Now Yashodamai did not see thousands, there is no description that he saw thousands of heads and thousands of hands and thousands of legs. He saw the whole Brahmanda basically. He did not see the multiplicity of the Devas and the Asuras and everyone over this. So what Yashodamai saw was that the universe within the form of Krishna. It is not in the form of Krishna, just the mouth of Krishna. And actually, it's described that in the 10th hand, if you read carefully, Krishna saw that Vishwarupa twice too, Mother Yashoda. Once was just when he was just a small baby in mother's lap. One day, Mother Yashoda was wanting to see how many teeth Krishna has here. Krishna, open your mouth. Open your mouth, such a small universe. He said, oh, and Krishna, I get about your mind, later forget it. So, this is what he saw was the universe within the form of the Lord, within the mouth of the Lord. That's what Yashodamai saw. And what did Duryodhana see? Duryodhana also saw something similar to what we described over here, by Arjuna. But one significant difference is which we will notice as we move forward, that Krishna also showed Arjuna the Kala Rupa. So, which was not shown to Duryodhana. So, Kala Rupa, what is that Kala Rupa? See, when we say universal form, one meaning of that is that the whole universe is contained within it. But universal form also means that everything that makes up the universe is contained. So universe has two components, there is space and there is time. So the time aspect was shown by Krishna to Arjuna. Time aspect means what? That when Arjuna saw that in the future that actually all the Kaurava soldiers are entering into the mouth. So that was not shown to Duryodhana. Because in Duryodhana, I thought there is no hope, things of fighting only. Whatever it is. Now that Kala Rupa was not shown to, although he saw, what he saw was a ferocious. But the Kala Rupa is the most ferocious. And as we read the narration, we find at one point, initially Arjuna is overrun by the Vismaya Rasa. Vismaya is one of the secondary rasas, which is described in the Bhagavad, in the Samasundra. But from the Vismaya Rasa, the Rasa changes to Vibhatsa. He's frightened, horrified actually. So where that transition takes place, that is the Kala Rupa description starting. So, in this sense, what Arjuna was shown was actually Adushta Purvam. So, some aspects were shown before, but some aspects were not shown before. The Kala Rupa was never shown before. And that's why Adushta Purvam is described over here. No, Vishwarupa with the Kala Rupa, with the Kala Rupa in it.
So,
space and time. So, space is shown as it is to Duryodhana also, but the time aspect is shown only to Arjuna over here. Ihaikastham jagat krishnam pashyasya characharam mama dehe gurakesha chanya drashtum ichyasi. So, Prabhupada emphasizes in the Ramayana, ekastham, in one place, ekastham. So actually, this is where you can see the full power of the Lord, that, you know, in one place, normally there is only one thing. But in one place, everything was shown. So how is that possible? That is where the Lord's extraordinary potency. Yes? Yeah, normally when, this is a good question, when Krishna was shown the Vishwaroop, was Krishna there? Krishna was there, but Arjuna was not able to see. Arjuna was not able to see Krishna also standing there. Arjuna just saw the Vishwaroop. And Chakravarti Pada says later in the purport, that's why he tells, because he's not able to first recognize only, what is this? That's why he asks, who are you?
If he is doing it, Krishna, he will not ask, who are you?
Bhavan Ugra Rupa. Bhavan, he is probably addressing Krishna as Tvam. Tvam is you. Bhavan is
Ah. You read it for right time. Bhavan Ugra Rupa. Who are you? He becomes very respectful and almost fearful.
Yes, and then Krishna says that there is Krishna, Vishwarupa is Krishna, or Krishna is Vishwarupa. So he says, Kalos Vinobaksha. And then, don't worry, I have come from destroy everyone except you.
Yes, we don't be afraid.
And then after that, Arjuna offers his obeisances and prayers. And then he requests, please, I don't want to see this form anymore. I want to see your two-handed form. Saumya Rupa. This is Ugra Rupa. I want to see the Saumya Rupa. I want to see the soft, gentle form. So he described that, Chakravarti Pandit said over there, that Arjuna was not seeing Krishna's two-handed form as the source of this form. And because of that, he had become fearful. And then Krishna showed him back to him, after showing him also the four-handed form. Yeah, it's not shown till now. Now in the next verse he described, oh, you cannot see because you don't have divine eyes. I'll give you the divine eyes. That's why I said he's creating anticipation. And then he'll, yes? Yeah, what is the reason? Yeah, actually he wants to set a standard for others so that whoever claims to be an avatar of God, there will be a standard how to decide that. And the seed is 10.42, the verse in which Krishna said that, I pervade by just my function. So now, Chakravarti Pandit says, Krishna says, yachcha anyat prashtum. Desire whatever you want to see and whatever else also you may desire to see in the future. So here he is hinting, what does this mean? Whether you will win in the future or not, what is the, you may want to know that in the fighting of battle. So that you will also see. Whether you are going to win or not. Yachcha anyat prashtum ichasi. Whether you are going to win or not, I will show you that also. You are not asked for that, because the time I am going to show Kalrupa, I will show you that also. And then he describes. Now you cannot see, so therefore I will give you divine eyes. Natu mam shakyase drashtum anenaiva svachakshusha divyam dadamite chakshuhu pashyame yogam aishwaram. Now where did Paschama Yoga Ishwaram come? 9.5. Yoga Ishwaram. So now see my divine opulence. So there the see was more in the sense of understand. Understand how I can do contradictory things. But here see is in literal sense. See now. Now Chakravarti Pandit is a very interesting insight here. He says that actually Krishna, Arjuna is such an advanced devotee that he is able to see the two-handed Shyamasundar form of the Lord. And if he can see that two-handed Shyamasundar form, he doesn't need any further qualification. This is a universal form. Because if you look at the Bhagavatam, the chapter which is called universal form is described as the first step in God realization. Second introduction of Bhagavatam. So, that is a very preliminary form. So he says, actually when he is saying divine eyes, that means that actually Krishna's vision has not been upgraded, it has been downgraded. From spiritual vision, he has been given divine vision. The word divine refers either to spiritual or it can refer to even heavenly, celestial. So the devatas like to see Vishnu in this grand form. The Sahasrashi, Visha, Purusha, the Pushtukta Prayada there. So they are offered to that form of the Lord with thousands of hands and thousands of legs. And that form, the devatas, because they are having a lot of power and they will submit to one who has greater power than them. Therefore, that form is what they are attracted to. And that's why even Brahma or Indra can be ruled, and this will not come as a small child, cowherd boys, playing with other cowherd boys. They can't think this is the same Supreme Lord. So, actually, from that intimate vision where Krishna is seen by Arjuna as Shyamasundar, now his vision is being not upgraded but downgraded. It's been from the spiritual vision he's been given a celestial vision. Celestial means heavenly. By which he'll be able to see that Vishwarupa. I think it is this far forward only. This is an amazing statement Prabhupada makes. Second paragraph, first sentence. Devotees who are correctly situated in a transcendental relationship with Krishna are attracted by loving features, not by a godless display of opulences. So every statement to make, it's a purely rustic statement. You know? God is displaying his opulences, and Prabhupada is saying God is a display of opulences.
So,
yeah, devotees, they are not interested in just knowing about God's greatness. And then greatness is fine. The greatness can bring enchanted submission bhakti. Just raw power. You know, Vishwarupa is just raw power that is being displayed. And that does not attract any devotee heart. So that's why Prabhupada does not directly say that his vision was downgraded, but Prabhupada basically indicates that in his purport also. Now,
that is a rhetorical statement to emphasize
that actually, if you see this whole thing, there was one Hindu who converted to Islam, so he has written a book called The Satanic Verses of the Bhagavad Gita. The Satanic Verses was a book which was written by Salman Rushdie. So, he was a Hindu, he became Muslim. So he wrote a book called The Satanic Verses of the Bhagavad Gita. And he is basically describing this only. And later on he will describe how, you know, their God is licking the blood of people. He's a bloodthirsty God he is. Leli Yase, that word which comes. So, the point is, if you look at it just from a, even when our this court case was going on in Russia, for our land in Moscow, so what the ROC, ROC is the Russian Orthodox Church. So what they did was, they took this section from the Gita. And they said, this is the God that these people worship. It's a horrible God. So, the God is not horrible, but the point is, that at first look, the description of him is very horrible. Now, if later on if you read it, you know how, because all these warriors are just entering into the mouth, and as they enter, they churvitai uttamangai. Anga is body, uttamanga is head, the best part of the body. And what is happening? The head is hitting against the tooth, cracking apart. Now all the blood is flowing aside, and really you see, Vishwarupa is licking that blood.
So, it seems quite ghastly.
But, what is the import of the Lord telling this? Actually, the Bhagavad Gita does not fight shy of revealing us to us the harsh, the naked reality of material nature. One aspect of the reality of nature is the cruelty of death and the cruelty of destruction. So now, many times when people see a huge disaster like a tsunami or earthquake or something like that happening, and they realize that, you know, our power and our reach is so tiny and insignificant. There's some higher power controlling everything. And we are simply puppets at play under that power. So, this aspect of nature is there, where the material world is characterized by destruction, is characterized by death. And now, is God causing that? God is not causing that. It is by our own karma that it is happening. So, by our own karma it is happening, and we can't really blame God for what he brings, what is brought in by our karma. But the important thing to understand is that this is a part of nature. And to be able to see its connection with God is important. You know, we see what is Krishna telling, you know, Jaragadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. Generally, he uses the word darshan in a very sacred sense. Darshan either means directly beholding the deity form of the Lord, or darshan means philosophy. But Krishna is saying you take darshan. Darshan means to systematically study, systematically understand birth, old age, sin and death. So because at first glance it doesn't appear to be very godly, so it appears to be very brutal and violent. But this is the aspect of nature, and that aspect is also coming from God. And when we discuss that description, we will see that it is quite brutal. Many times people ask this question that, you know, why is life so brutal? Why is life so cruel? Why does God do such things? Now, at one level we can say it's because of karma, which is true. But you know, in the larger scheme of things, pain plays a very important role. And there is a disease which is called as SIPA. SIPA is short for CIPA. Congenital insensitivity to pain with anthroxis. So what is this? Actually, there are only 100 to 200 people who are suffering from this disease. So in America, in somewhere, Michigan, somewhere, Minnesota, there's a girl, 1.5 year old girl who is suffering from this. And what happens? They can't feel pain at all. So when this girl, she was just a few months old, she would practically lick. She didn't have teeth also, but she was just licking everything. And she would put her mouth around her tongue, around a knife. Not blood will come out, but she will not feel any pain. Well, she was 1.5 years old. At that time, as her teeth started coming out, what she would do is, without any expression, the children are annamaya kosha. So everything they experience by eating. So what she would do is, she would just bite her tongue. The bite with her tooth, her fingers, rip out the skin and blood will come out. But and proxus means what? They should not get any tears also. The water cannot form in the eyes. So she can't feel any pain, she can't cry. And at every teeth, as soon as it grew, within 6 hours, the doctor had to artificially remove the teeth. And doctors say that such a child normally cannot live beyond 10 to 15 years. And because you know, child, even if it falls from a bed, it doesn't feel anything. So, there's an interview with his parents. They said, parents have only one prayer. If only I have a child would feel some pain.
Can you imagine parents praying?
If only our child will feel some pain. Because pain, the pain and the fear of pain is a great deterrent. You know, if I am walking off a 10-story building and I don't feel any pain,
what will happen? I'll be committing suicide without intending to.
So, now, even in our limited understanding and our limited experience, we can see how pain plays an important role in life. And the absence of pain in the normal system of life can create chaos. So, the pain of this world, Prabhupada writes in the Isha Upanishad, the miseries of material existence indirectly serve to remind us of our incompatibility with matter. They indirectly serve for what? To remind us of our incompatibility with matter. But as souls, we do not belong to this material world. We need to go somewhere beyond. So yes, death is cruel, death is painful. But then the reminder of death, the focus on death helps us to think of something eternal. So in Vedic culture, death is also thought of as a guru. And death teaches us what the guru is also supposed to teach us. That look beyond the temporary material world to the eternal world. So, Maharaj writes in his new book, so we are working on a new website for Maharaj. This is basically, so, for Maharaj, what is contemplating the mystery of death is an exercise. What does it do? Intended to encourage us to make the best use of every moment of life, strengthen our conviction that spirituality is a priority, and enrich our appreciation for the blessing of being alive.
So, can you imagine? It's a positive way of explaining death, you know? Explain the contemplation on death. What does it do?
It is to encourage us to make the best use of every moment of life. Yes, death is going to come, so let me use my moment. And how do I use my moments? As spirituality is a priority, not that I use that, make best use for some gratification. No, spirituality is a priority. And when we start practicing spirituality, we understand that, you know, living itself is a blessing because every moment is an opportunity for purification. So, when we look at the negativity of this world, that helps us to take shelter of the positivity of Krishna consciousness. So, this whole section is quite nonsense and brutal. But the brutality is meant to make us take shelter of the sweetness of Krishna. And that's what we see happens to Arjuna. Arjuna says, please don't show me this. Please don't show me this. It's not just some entertainment. You know, like you turn on some TV channel and say, hey, this is not a good TV channel. Let me turn on another TV channel. Actually, Krishna is illustrating the nature of mental existence. When we see the naked reality of this world, we start realizing that actually we need to find some eternal shelter. But most of the time, our society does not show us this naked reality. It hides this naked reality. Naked reality means the cruelty of death, the harshness of sufferings that people go through. It's very, very terrible. Yeah, Krishna teaches you through experiential learning. So another thing which Maharaj said nicely, starting off. Although dying is often painful and difficult, for those who are disengaged from the fears and ambitions of an egoistic life and turn their hearts to God, death is a release. At the time of death, we close our eyes. When we open them again, We are home.
So, very nice. So before, a lot of demands are there. Disengage from the fears and ambitions of an egoistic life and turn their hearts to God. So this is basically Trunada Pisudinchada Sarovati Sajana Amanina Mana Dena Kirtaya Sudhara. The contemporary way of putting it. Well, they are looking for a publisher right now.
Book is complete.
The tentative title, when we were working on it, I was working with Maharaj, is Yoga of Love. So, after that, we don't know what is finalized. Sorry? Penguin is not going to do it because their editor retired. Their editor who did spiritual books retired. And the production house said that we don't have any spiritual expert who can tell us whether this book will go well or not. So, we decided that we will publish. Okay. Where were we? So, okay, so that's why it's called a godless split, because it appears to be quite frightening in one sense. Just go ahead. Translation?
Sanjaya said, O King, having spoken thus, the Supreme Lord of all mystic power, the personality of God, displayed his universal form to Arjuna.
Arjuna saw in that universal form unmuted mouth, unmuted eyes, unmuted wonderful vision. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine appraised weapons. He wore celestial garments and garments, and many divine scents were smeared over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unmuted, all expanded.
Sanjay is able to see the Aishwarya Rupa of the Lord. And in fact, Sanjay will remember this also. Rupa Vatya Bhutam Hari, the second last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, 18.77, when he is remembering, Tatsya Samsurajan Samsutya Rupa Vatya Bhutam Hari. He remembers this form, Vismayo Me Mahan Rajan. So he also goes through the same Vismay which Arjuna is going through. So the other soldiers are apparently not able to see this issue, Rupa, it's described. But Sanjay is given that vision to see it. Dhritarashtra sees a second reading.
Yes.
He's hearing. Of course, Dhritarashtra saw that Vishwarupa original earlier on. Because he requested Krishna, please allow me to see it. He said, yes. Krishna, when Krishna showed the Vishwarupa Duryodhana, at that time Dhritarashtra requested, please give me eyes so that I can see. So he got the eyes and he saw, but still he did not see him. Pashya, Apina, Pashya, the generally, the way the benediction was given, it seems that he had this benediction also. And one of the among the secondary rasas which he experiences is vismaya. So it seems by the arrangement of Vyasadeva, he was allowed to see that. And in fact, in Aipalli Samacharya, Sanjay is also considered a spiritual master. Sanjay is a spiritual master of Dhritarashtra. But it is described how the same message can have contrasting effects. The same message that was given by Krishna to Arjuna was also given by Sanjay to Dhritarashtra. But it transformed Arjuna and did not transform Dhritarashtra. Why? Because Arjuna was submissive, Dhritarashtra was attached. But still, even though Sanjay could not transform the heart of Dhritarashtra, still just by speaking that message, Sanjay became ecstatic. And I said, Vishyam cha muhur muhur. So that is the effect of preaching Krishna consciousness. Even if people don't become devotees, we become joyful. But the problem is often that, you know, we are not interested while preaching in remembering Krishna, we are interested in seeing how many people are becoming impressed by us and are becoming our followers. Not even devotees of Krishna. So, when we say nobody is becoming our follower, then we become depressed. But actually, if you see, if
speaking in terms of getting an opportunity to remember Krishna, the remembrance of Krishna can make us quite joyful. So in that sense, preaching is never a failure. Even if people don't become devotees, they keep preaching. We are remembering Krishna and we are becoming purified by that. So basically Sanjay speaks in the first person thrice. First is the Sra Sanjay Uvacha, then second is over here, and third will be at the end of the book. So like this, Sanjay is speaking throughout, but it's like the camera is moving backward. The first the camera is focused on Krishna, first it's focused on Sanjay and Dhritarashtra. Then what Sanjay and Dhritarashtra are discussing, that goes further, and the camera focuses on Krishna and Arjuna. Now here what is happening is again the camera is moving backwards. So that we will not only hear what Arjuna and Krishna are discussing, but we will see the emotions and we will see the description of everything. So that's why the camera is shifted backwards. And now what Sanjay is seeing is being described. Just like, say, our Chaitanya Prabhu was somewhere else. So now imagine if he had a camera which he could see everything. So you know, say you are asking something, I am answering something. But then he is able to see not only that, he can also see the reaction of everybody else. Some people are sleeping, some people are enjoying, some people are looking at the watch, everything is happening. Like that, what happens is, this is although ultimately it's a historical event, but there is also a, it's also a dramatic narrative. The dramatic narrative, when to bring a close-up, when to take the camera back, and all that is very intricate skill. So because this is going to be the most dramatic scene in the Bhagavad Gita, the camera is taken backward. So that, you can see the whole view. Yeah, they are there in the Mahabharata. So that means the Mahabharata, as we know, is there in the heavenly planets also. So whenever it came to the earth and it was written on the Vyasa page, the 5,000 years ago, Vyasa page through Ganesha, because that time the chapters were made. Yeah, we discussed that, 10 days. We discussed that. Somebody can tell them that afterwards. Basically, Sanjay had gone to the battlefield, and Sanjay went to the battlefield, and Dhritarashtra had full confidence that Bhishma will win the war. When Bhishma falls, Sanjay comes running back. And he goes, Bhishma has fallen. On hearing this, Dhritarashtra falls unconscious. And then he comes back to consciousness and says, what happened? Please tell me everything from the beginning. And then, the whole narration starts. Okay, so let's move forward. One person at a time. No, it's past, but it's narration and present. So for example, you know, where Sanjay, Dhritarashtra asked, what happened then? And they said, this. And what happened then? But whenever narrating is as if narration is a present tense, obviously. Yeah. Yeah, that is true. After he comes back.
Hundreds of thousands of suns.
Where I should rise. Oppenheimer was a scientist who was in charge of the Manhattan Project. Manhattan Project was the project that manufactured the first atom bomb. So before that they tried exploding the atom bomb in a desert in Nevada, so in America. So when that bomb exploded, the effulgence rose high into the sky. At that time Oppenheimer, where the scientist was.
Hundreds of thousands of suns were derived.
Anyway, I said another verse, the Kalo Sudokshay Prabhupada. He studied the Bhagavad Gita also, and this verse was famous for that in the West.
At that time Arjuna could see in the universal form of the Lord unlimited expansions of the universe situated in the form, divided into many, many houses.
So what is it? Ekastham aprahmattam anekastham. Ekastham means one place only it is. So many, many things in different places. So here, one, so many heads and hands and legs. He saw some other heads, some hands and some legs. It's very difficult for us to conceptualize. And we get a picture. We have a picture in our Krishna book also or in the Bhagavata also. But that is a very simplistic rendition. So what he saw was very stunning. Yeah.
Then the reason I saw is to say that the name Arjuna, all his name offered, all his hands began to pray to the Lord.
So, what is to Vismaya Vishto? First happened was? Oral by Vismaya. Vismaya Rasa Arjuna is having first of all. Pushtaroma. Pushtaroma is?
Yes.
Air Rasa Anjuna. And? Pranam Meshirsa Kritanjali. Folded his hands immediately. So actually, whenever some huge, especially for a pious person, if he sees any extraordinary display of power, that reminds him of God. And so Arjuna, naturally, he understands, he starts offering. Now, he offers brief prayers over here also. But these are not so much prayers, these are descriptions. It's like, he's not, occasionally he says Namami, but his primary is describing what he's saying. So, divine serpent is Shesha, which is at the bottom of the universe. So, right from the top of the universe to the bottom, Brahmaji Satyaloka is the top, and Urugamsha Divyam. Urugam is the serpent. Divyam is the Ashan Shesha. So, they will see everything from the top to the bottom. That's why Ekastham and Pravibhaktam Anekatha. They will see everything there. Then, no man, so basically just all pervading the form. Arjuna is just able to be conscious that I am here and I am just seeing. Wherever he sees, he just sees the universal form only. Yeah.
Your form is difficult to see because of its glaring effulgence, spreading on all sides, like blazing fire or the immeasurable radiance of the sun. Yet I see this glowing form everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs and discs.
Durnirikshan samantat. Nirikshan is to see. Durnirikshan is difficult to see. So, one of the names of Lord Narasimhadev is Durnirikshan. And he was, when he appeared, he was so effulgent, it was very difficult to see him. So, the closest that any of the avataras comes to this Vishwarup's description is Narasimhadev. Very angry. She also is very fierce and very frightening. Vishwarup is also very fierce and frightening. We'll come to that. As soon as the description completes, we'll go to the PowerPoint. This section completes and then we'll discuss these different things.
You are the supreme primal objective. You are the ultimate resting place of all this universe. You are inexhaustible and you are the oldest. You are the maintainer of the eternal religion, the personality of Godhead. This is my opinion.
Yes. So here, if at all we call these prayers, these are more like samprarthanatmika, glorificatory prayers. There are no reasons still now. It is Sanatana Swam Purusho Mato Me. You are the supreme person. This is my opinion. Yeah.
You are without religion, without orange. Your glory is unlimited. Your numberless songs and suns and moon are at your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance.
Yes. So, Chakravarti Pat quotes Sridhar Swami and in the section I described that when somebody is astonished about something, then in astonishment he repeats the same thing again and again. Suppose some devotees are not expecting to meet and suddenly you meet him. How come you are here? How come you are here? You ask the same thing to repeat again. So like that is Vismaya Vishnu, is overcome by this. That's the same thing again. You know? There is no beginning, there is no middle, there is no end. And the numberless arms, aneka bahus are dosa nalya, so many arms. And now he's saying numberless arms. So now from here onwards, he starts seeing the Kala Rupa. No, they are not able to see. It was a special vision that was given to Arjuna. Divyam dadami te chakshu. He told them that. That's why they were able to see. And they could see something was happening. Arjuna suddenly holding his hand and offering prayer. They were wondering what is happening. But they couldn't make out what is happening. So from 19 onwards, karma restriction starts. So from amazement, everything changes to fear. So previous verse, what was this word is correct? The burning, the fire is coming out and burning everything. And now it is everybody is purged out. Everybody is stoked. Now go ahead.
All the hosts of the universe are entering into you. Some of them very much afraid are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages are supported to each other. All
sages are supported to each other. Swasti Tyukta Maharshi Siddha Sangha. Swasti, Swasti is another word for Shanti. The Swasti symbol is there. Swasti Tyukta. That's a symbol and that's also a phrase. Swasti is let there be peace, let there be peace. So now, Hitler had also adopted the symbol of Swasti as his national symbol for the national flag. But they changed the orientation. He did not want Swasti, he wanted a Swasti, not special symbol for everyone. Now, okay, where the demigod is able to see this form, actually how it is, within the form the demigod was seen. Within the revelation the demigod was there. And there, this Vishwaroop which is being seen, the demigods are affected by that. But the other warriors on the battlefield are not able to see. So when he is showing the Vishwaroop, it's not that, it's not like a still photo of Brahma is sitting and the motionless. It's an action movie being shown. So the demigods are also reacting over this. The sages are also reacting. Everybody is reacting over this. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
O mighty armed one, all the planets with the demigods are disturbed at seeing your great form with its many faces, eyes, arms, thighs, legs and belly and your many terrible teeth. And as they are disturbed, so am I.
So, Pravachita Tathaham. So, this actually takes a very frightening event for Kshatriya to say that I am afraid. Kshatriya will never say that I am afraid. Even if he is afraid, he will not say. Kshatriya Kshatriya is used to seeing blood and violence, but this is such an overwhelming thing that Arjuna becomes afraid. And he starts. Now, from here onward, it's fully. So the transition was taking place from Vishwaroop to Kala Rupa, from Vishwaroop to Bhai. Now from here onward, it's fully Bhai. So, Jitinda Vindami Shamam Vishnu. Shama is one of the qualities of a Brahmana. Peaceful mind. They are not able to be peaceful at all. And now he starts describing. Damshtra karalani te mukhani. Damshtra is teeth. Karalani is terrible. The language itself means Damshtra karalani te mukhani. Nishtvaiva kalanal sannibhani. Kalanal is the fire of analis fire. Kalanal is the fire of destruction. Fire of kala. Sannibhani. It is pervading all this. I am frightened to describe. Now he started describing. So Trilav is already untangled, so many hands, so many arms, so many legs, devatas and everything. But we start seeing some familiar people over there. Yeah?
All the sons of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings, and Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and our chief soldiers also, are rushing into your tearful mouth. And some, I see, trapped with head smashed between your teeth.
Vaktrani te twaramana vishanti. Vishanti is when Vaktrani is the mouth. And Dhamstra Karalani Bhyanakali. Bhyanapita there. Lukechit, some of them. Villadana Dashanantareshu. Dashanantareshu. Dashan is teeth, antareshu. So, with the teeth, space between the teeth. Vajra sadrishyante churnite uttamange. Churnite. Sanskrit is such a language that, you know, the word itself conveys the emotion sometimes. On occasions. It just feels something which is very fascinating about happening. The Kala Rupa, the description of the Kala Rupa is clearly focused on. It's just a transition taking place now, from 19 onwards. The 26th focus is exclusively on that. And now there are two analogies given. This is a significant. We'll read this both and then I'll explain.
As the many waves of the rivers flow into the ocean, so do all these great warriors enter blazing into your mouths.
Next one.
I see all people rushing full speed into your mouths. As moths dash to the destruction of blazing fire.
So, he says that these two modes of destruction, one is river going to the ocean and the second is moth going into fire. They describe involuntary and voluntary going towards death. That means Bhishma Pitama did not want that war. But by the arrangement of Providence, he was on the wrong side. He had to fight and he had to die. So for the river to go towards the ocean, it is just a natural course of action. The river just goes towards the ocean. On the other hand, for the moth to go towards the fire, the moth goes by its own choice. So that moth is compared to Duryodhana and his allies, who deliberately chose the war. So now Vedanta Deshika is one of the prominent followers of Ramanujacharya. And he gives a beautiful analysis, comparison of these two analogies. And he says that actually although both of them are being destroyed, there is a difference. What is the difference? He says that when a moth goes towards the fire, nobody gains anything by that. At the end, all that is, there are just dead bodies to the cause, which has to be cleaned away. Nobody gets any benefit. On the other hand, he says when a river goes towards the ocean, all the people who are on the banks of the river get benefited. So he says like that, a devotee and a materialist, both are going to die. But the materialist life and the materialist death, it doesn't do any good to anyone. Materialist life and death are like the moth going towards the fire. On the other hand, you can say the devotee is also going to die. Yes, devotee is also going to die, but the devotee's life and his death are very different. As I just said that while the river goes towards the ocean, it benefits all the people on his side. Like that a devotee, while he is living, although he is going towards death, he benefits the other. So first point of the analogy is that one is natural, the other is chosen by one's own will. Second point is that one is first is beneficial, second is not at all beneficial. And third is very insightful. He says that when the moth enters into fire, it just gets destroyed. And you know, the soul gets separated from the body gets reduced to ashes, and it just has to go into another world, so it's destroyed. On the other hand, when the river enters into the ocean, there is no change of its essential nature. When the water is there in the river before, and the water is there in the ocean. So it's like that, when a devotee dies, he returns to the spiritual world. The devotee is living at a spiritual level in this world, and he continues living at a spiritual level, then he returns back to the spiritual world. So in this way, in his life and in his death. So in his life, he is benefiting others, and in his death, there is actually no essential change for him. It's only a peripheral change. And instead of being in the river, now he's in the ocean. Instead of being in this material world, now he's in the spiritual world. And he continues to live, he continues to serve the Supreme Lord. And that's why, although externally point of view, both of them may die, but there's a big difference. The difference is that one is serving in this world and the next world, the other is doing nothing good in this world and is destroying oneself and causing suffering in the next world after that. So it's interesting, what is that? Samruddha Vegaha. So, Vegaha, they are Samruddha, they are prosperous with speed.
Samruddha, literally, if you take it as that.
So, they are full of speed, they are prosperous with speed. But what is their speed doing? Their speed is taking them faster and faster towards destruction. So, modern science and technology, people are living faster. And they are Samruddha Vegaha. But what are they doing with that? They are just going towards it. Prabhupada was once having a morning conversation that, you know, modern scientists are now challenging that we will counter death, nobody will die. So they are, these scientists said, they are not afraid of death. So Prabhupada says that, you know, yes, they are bravely rushing to heaven. Yeah, they are brave, but what is the use of their bravery? Just charging towards hell in spite of that, towards suffering, towards death. And then comes that lily, you see what I was describing, you know? Why?
O Vishnu, I see you devouring all people from all sides with your flaming mouth, covering all the universe with your effulgence. You are manifest with terrible scorching rays.
Yeah. So specifically the word is Leli says you are licking. Prasamana. You are licking and you are devouring Samanta from all directions. So it is described as Kumbhakarna. You know, when he would be fighting, what he would do is, monkey that would come on him, just catch them, put them in his mouth. And when you put them out, their crushed bodies will come out of his nose and come out of his ears and fall off. Just feel that, you know, the monkeys got frightened. Still they were fighting on them. Heroically. Now,
after seeing this, Arjuna says, Bhavan Rupa, who are you, my dear Lord? Please tell me. His translation.
So he's frightened, you know, all of them are going to his mouth, am I also going to go in his mouth? What is your mission? So the poet is, oh Lord of Lord, fears of form. Very poetically Prabhupada is translating over here. So, please tell me who you are and what is your mission? And he just asks one question and then Krishna immediately replies. We decide this all of them. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kala Sri Loka Kshaya Krit Pravidho, Lokan Samahartum Iha Pravidha, भविष्यन्ति सर्वे ये अवस्थिता प्रत्यनीतेषु रोधाः. So with the exception of you. And now, the Acharya will explain that Rite can also mean without you. Right? Like Rite artham yat satyat na patyat chatma. That comes in the definition of Maya. Rite is, so without you. Krishna is telling Arjuna that even without you, the soldiers on all sides will be destroyed. Therefore, you become my instrument and take the glory. So, if you take the Rite to mean without you, then the next verse immediately makes the instructions become very clear. Tasmattamuttishtha yasho labhasva jitva chukram bhumshvarajyam samruddham magayayate nihata purvameva nivitta matram bhavasau yatachi.
Therefore, get up, pretend to find and win glory. Offer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement and to you. O Dhanasachi, can be but as dismayed in the fight.
So this is the first and probably the only time Sovyasachi is used to describe Arjuna. Sovyasachi is one who is ambidextrous. Ambidextrous means you can fight equally well with both hands. So you are very skilled, but the perfection of your skill is in using it to become an instrument of my will. So Sovyasachi, nimitta matram, just become an instrument for me and fight. So now, so, Prabhupada now goes elaborately. Prabhupada always keeps the audience in mind. And then he is telling how the scientists who say that this world is like this, like that, perhaps, maybe, they think that there is no plan in this world, but there is a plan. And what we have to do is, we have to become instruments in that plan of the Lord. Yeah, now it's very significant verse. Translation is ready.
Drona, Bhishma, Jayadratha, Karna and the other great warriors have already been destroyed by me.
Therefore, kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight and you will vanquish your enemies in battle.
So it's interesting that Jayadrath is not a very significant warrior, but he's going to play a significant role. So, to reassure Arjuna, Krishna is coming, Jayadrath will also be killed. Jayadrath, Bhishma, Dronam, Jayadrath, Maya, Hatam, they're all being killed by me. Now, if you remember, in the fourth chapter, 4.24, Chakravarti Pal explains that Krishna is telling Arjuna, perform a yajna. What is that yajna? You are the Brahmana. And this Kurukshetra war is the Yajnasthali. And your bow is the spoon. And the Kauravas are the Ahuti. And your bow and arrow are the spoon by which the Ahuti will be offered to the in the Kurukshetra battlefield. So now Krishna told that is a yajna. And generally when we do yajna, at that time, the Ahuti is offered in the fire, and the fire is considered to be the mouth of Vishnu. So Krishna is practically demonstrating how the Ahuti that you are going to offer is going to be taken by me in my mouth. So he said, they are all entering into my mouth. So it's a practical demonstration of theory now. So, do not be disturbed, just fight. And now, after this, now again the focus shifts back to Arjuna, and Arjuna starts offering prayers. So let's go over to the PowerPoint now. Now this is a there is no description of Lord Ramchandra showing Vishwaru in the Valmiki Ramayana. Now we don't know the other Ramayans they showed, but basically the principle is that one should be able to show superhuman powers which are not possible by any ordinary mystic ability. Like Krishna lifting Govardhan or Lord Ramchandra drawing up the ocean. So, one should be able to show extraordinary powers. And that extraordinary power is very different from producing some hash or something like that, curing some sick people. Well, that's yogic powers. But that sort of thing, drawing up the ocean is Yogeshwar's power. It's not just Yogi's power. So, this PowerPoint itself is a whole class. So, we will just rush through it. And most of it just is nice display of what all of you know. So, the universal form. So, experiencing God's presence in the material world. That is Virat Rupa. There are different names. Virat Rupa, Vishwa Rupa, Kala Rupa. Prabhupada translates them all as universal form. So, these are questions which will be discussed over here. So, is it real or imaginary? And how does that form help us? So Prabhupada explains the super soul expands by his potential energy stream of the universal form, which includes everything manifested in different varieties of organic and inorganic materials. So everything manifested is included in the universal form. This is basically describing the form which contains the whole universe. So now, Virakrutiya. So it's the subtle body of the Hiranyagarbha super soul. So now, what does this mean? First of all, what is the Hiranyagarbha super soul? Okay. Super soul of the universe. So he has a subtle body and a gross body. So the gross body is what we see directly, the whole universe. The subtle body is a prototype from which the universe develops. So the Virat Rupa exists in the that's in subtle form. Now is it real or imaginary? The form is real. So Prabhupada explained that the Virat and Archa, they are all non-different from the eternal form. Now, there is one thing which is real. Now, let us see something else which you see. So, we can think of the Lord also with this universal form, the cosmic impersonal picture of the Lord. So, we have his association. As we described, think of the mountains and the bones. Basically, the idea is to remember Krishna. We can have association of Krishna by that. So, Prabhupada quotes about how we should concentrate on the Lord. Such in the Vedas. Okay, so then this is described in the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, chapters 5, 1 to 3, chapters 5 and 6. So now, this is on the Bhagavad Gita, we know this. Krishna has shown avyakta murtina, I am pervading this whole universe. Arjuna asks, show me this form. I will show you, he says. And he's describing the vibhutis first. The wrong, all the vibhutis are there, which we're not going to. All of you know these vibhutis. Krishna's opulence we have described. Now, this is the important thing. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many matters. This is Shrotavari and Rajendra. So then those people like to think about material things. So tell them about a material manifestation of God's form. So this is Mama Vartamanu Vartante Manushya Partha Sarvasha. Everyone is on the path of the Lord, but you can go either one way or the other way. Toward light or toward darkness. So this is the best way is Etan Nirvidya Mananam Chitamaktum, constant chanting. But those who can't chant, what do you do? They cannot chant, then they can practice this Virat Rupa. Focus. So these are all materialistic people. Sinamam Vishkrita Namura Prasabdinte Naradhama. There is a second of that one. They can't understand the Supreme Lord by the screen. So those who are unable to pin their faith in the personal feature of the Absolute are given a chance to associate with the Virat Rupa. Again, Prabhupada says the cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord. So how to remove the foolishness out of the mind? Krishna has asked, he says, the all good personal conception, think about it. So these are all the meditations from the Bhagavatam. You are not going to this. The rivers are the rains of the gigantic body, the trees are the hairs. It's very beautiful pictures also. And this is Virat Rupa discussion on the second canto. Let's go over this quickly and I'll explain it. The horse, mule, camel and elephant are his names. So the birds are indication of his masterful artistic sense. The wonders of this world are greatness, representation of the greatness of his splendor. So now, this form is imaginary. What is this form? That, you know, the heels and toes are Rasatal, the ankle are the Mahatal, shanks constitute the Rathal. This is described in the 2.1. Now here Prabhupada only says, great philosophers imagine that the complete palace strengths are in the universe are displayed with the different upper and lower limbs of the universal body of the God. So the keyword is imagine. That the Brahmana represents his mouth. From 2.537. So again the question comes, is it real or imaginary? The form is factual, but the concept of Krishna's form in matter is imaginary. The Lord has no material form.
And what happened? Oh God.
So, that means now there are two different conceptions going on over here.
Comparing with the form of the Lord is imaginary.
I'll explain this. Yeah, here we come. This is good, yeah. So, the form is factual. Factual means what? That the Lord, this is the subtle body, and the Lord can manifest it to our vision whenever He wants. That the whole universe is contained within Him, the whole universe pervades Him, and the whole universe can be revealed through Him. So that Virat Rupa in that sense is real. But there is no play, there is no form of the Lord, the universe is here, and there is a form of the Lord in which His legs are Rasata, the head is Satyaloka, and things like that. So that conception is a mental exercise for people to understand how great God is. So for those whose ideas of greatness is in terms of physical size, then it is told that, see how great God is. So that conception is imaginary. But there is a Vishwarup which can be manifested whenever required by the Lord. Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's true. That means that the whole, Krishna's form and matter is imaginary. So, now Krishna when he wants, he can display his form. And when he displays his form, like the Vishwarupa, that is not imaginary. Because Krishna, from his own rupa, is manifesting this rupa. So in that sense, it's not imaginary. But the idea that when one contemplates this mountain and sea, it is the bone of Vishnu. So that conception is imaginary. But if it helps one to think of God, then it is good. Because actually everything in this world is nonsense imaginary. Because we are in a hallucination and forgetfulness of Krishna. Yeah? No, but it's told there only. We quoted a verse only from Bhagavatam. It's imaginary.
It is not by some normal people's imagination.
Correct. Just how if something is given in scriptures, how can it be imaginary? See, just like in the scriptures only, the story of Puranjan is told. And the story of Puranjan is told, at that time it is told, it is an allegorical story. It is not a historical story, it is an allegorical story. So, that means it is a story which is told to convey a particular moral. There was no actual king by the name Puranjan. So like that, in the scriptures only, something may be used as a teaching tool, which may not be a historical reality. So, the Vishwaroop, the descriptions like that are a teaching tool, are a meditational tool. Okay. Can we imagine in our own way? Yes and no. What does it mean? That the idea is that there are people who will not read scripture also. But, like, do you know about those five levels of God realization which Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, the Ganapatya, Shaurya, Shakta, Shaiva and Vaishnava, no? Okay, it's related, so maybe I can explain that here.
Where is it?
This is a book by Satyaraj Prabhu. It's called From Nothingness to Personhood. So, that is from nothingness is Shunyata of the Buddhists to personhood. This is elaborate and this is a pure text. I don't have a PowerPoint on this. But you can just go over this and you'll get some idea. So basically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about different kinds of spiritualists. So basically what he's doing is, Panchopasana is there, which especially the impersonalists do. And they say that the same absolute truth is manifested in these five forms. Which are the five forms? Ganesh, Surya, Shiva, Devi and Vishnu. And they say all forms are equivalent. Whichever you want, you can take and meditate on. So he says that these five forms of meditation are not equivalent, they are progressive. And they indicate progressive levels of consciousness. And Prabhupada quotes this briefly in one purport. So he says, what is that? The first level is, this is elaborate, I'll just read out quickly some things. So first level is Shaktism. When people are at a very preliminary level of spiritual consciousness, they think, okay, how is this world moving? It is because of energy. Power, energy. So what they think? When there's lightning is there, there's waterfall is there. When they see the power of nature, they are very impressed. And dragons will pour down. They're like, oh, so powerful. So powerful. So basically, this is the... Now, there's also, of course, a personified deity Shakti Dev. But he's talking here about the level of consciousness of the worshipper. So there, people worship the power. Then they move forward and then they think, okay, there's power, but where is this power coming from? This power is coming from the sun. So then, that is, they become Shaurya at that time. And at Shaurya level, what happens is, actually sun worship has been there throughout the world in different places at different times. The idea is the sun is the source of energy. Energy is what makes things happen in this world. The source of energy is the sun. And then, after that, one goes to what is called as Ganapatya. Ganapatya means that he says that basically after looking around at this world and seeing, okay, this is, there is energy here and the source of the energy is the sun. But actually, beyond the energy, there is the energetic. Even the energy there has to be somebody living who will make things happen. And that energetic level, they start worshipping animals and plants. That is the Ganapatya level. Yeah? No. See, that's why I say they're two different things now. There is Ganapati is surely a person, Shiva, the Shakti is a person, Surya is a person.
No.
What he is saying is, is this Ganapati different from Ganapati or is it the same as Ganapati? It is, there are two different things in the sense that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about the evolution of consciousness that takes place as one's conception of divinity rises up. So after moving from Shakti, which is on this earth, to source of Shakti, the Surya. And we are sort of thinking, okay, but with the Shakti we have to do something, there has to be Shaktiman for that. But the first aspect of Shaktiman is animals. So then they start worshipping various animals. And then beyond that, then they start worshipping humans. And that worship of humans is Shaivism. So basically this is talked about in Chaitanya Shikshamrita quite elaborately. And then, where they start worshipping humans. So in fact he puts Buddhism and Jainism both in Shaivism. This is very interesting. He puts them as worship of humans. And then after that, he brings them into Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism means, one understands that actually God is beyond the humans also. There is one supreme being who is there. And that Vaishnavism is talked about in Christianity also, it is talked about in Islam also, that one supreme being. But he says all these five, so here one is thinking of God as a supreme person, but still the conception is material. And then one goes beyond that to transcendence. So anyway, this is not something which we can discuss here in detail, but this is just an introduction to puzzle you. The point is that there is much more to discuss, but the principle I just come here now in our connection is the universal form is a means to evolve our consciousness. So by meditating on something like that, if one can start thinking of God, so anybody in any culture, even if that person is not very Srimad Bhagavatam, he goes down to lightning when he sees that. When he sees a thunderbolt, he feels the power and he feels this power and goes down to that. There is some conception of a higher power to which one is submitting oneself. And that is accepted. Okay? So, the form is factual. This is Krishna's Vishwarupa, which was displayed to Arjuna. Now, Prabhupada is not devoted how much interested in seeing this issue. So let's go ahead. So pantheism means to see everything in relationship with God. So devotees are not pantheists. But pantheism, to worship anything as God, to see God in anything that is good as a step towards knowing about God. So now the Virat Roop exists and is all pervading, but the Lord shows it only when He chooses to. And this is a quote from the Bhagavatam, which is saying that when the Lord chooses, He will give it by devotional service. So He actually saw it, it was not a dream for Arjuna. Some could see a universal form. Arjuna was shown the Vishwarupa, which caused him dismay, and he was shown the Kalarupa. At that time, Urdhana manifested, which was different. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also manifested a Vishwarupa too. There are various ways of experiencing God. So one of them is through the bounty of nature. There is no end to my divine manifestations. There is also, we can experience God's presence as destruction and death, as a destroyer and it callows me. So one side is the positive side of nature. Oh, God is providing us so much in this world. God is so kind, God is so good. But then we can understand that actually this nature is meant to be destructive. So therefore, we have to go beyond this. Another way of experiencing God is as a destroyer. I am all devouring death. And then beyond Prabhupada, you know Prabhupada's example, isn't it? Bombing. Seeing as Krishna is coming as these bombs. So, Prabhupada is saying, we were seeing that Vishwarupa, you see at that time. So I was thinking, of course, that this is also Krishna's another form. But this form is not a very lovable form. Not very lovable form, you see. Or, ultimately, you can meet him just like you meet a good old friend. That is the way a devotee wants to meet him. And have loving exchanges with him. So this is how we would like to. How would we like to meet Krishna? Hmm?
everyone will meet him at the time of death. But the meeting experiences tend to differ drastically. Keep in our mouths. See? This is the brief discussion of the Vishwarupa, which is not just focused on the Bhagavad Gita, it is a comprehensive understanding. So I'll summarize three main points from this PowerPoint. First is that actually God has a form which He can manifest when in which the whole universe is contained in His body. But apart from that, the idea of the different aspects of nature making up the limbs of God, that is a conception. That is a conception which is a tool for remembering God for those who cannot remember Him ordinarily. And beyond that, by such remembrance, one can evolve one's consciousness and ultimately rise towards Krishna consciousness. So one way is through Vishwarupa, and we also discussed from Shaktism to Surya, Shakti to Saurya to Ganpati to Shaiva to Vaishnava. That's also there. So beyond that is of course the transcendental Vaishnava, where we meet Lord Krishna in His Satchitananda form. So let's come back to Arjuna's prayer now. So, not here? Which class of people contemplate on the Vishwarupa? That's what those who are in the material conception, for whom bigness, the greatness of God has to be seen in terms of physical greatness. So they have not yet understood the transcendental idea of God's form. So that's like the first step in God realization. Oh, just now we had this, no? We discussed this. Nani chakra only, no? Prutaktvena, ekatvena, putaktvena, bhaudha vishvato mukham. So there, if you remember the purport, I forgot to mention that in the purport. In that three levels, ekatvena, prutaktvena, and bhaudha, prutaktvena, bhaudha and vishvato mukham. It's a progression. So those who think of themselves as God are the lowest. And those who worship prutaktvena, bhaudha, those who worship the various demigods, they are higher. And vishvato rupam, they are still higher. Because why they are considered higher than the monists and the demigod worshippers? Because they have understood at least one supreme God. That conception, confusion is not there. So in that sense they are higher. So what is not there? Yeah. So that is, so there, Bhagavatam doesn't talk about this at all. Bhagavatam, because there is koi mood going forward. So in the Bhagavatam, it's just the conception of God and matter. Because here, Prabhupada is telling that the Vishwarupa is not different from the Archarupa. The same as the eternal form of the Lord. Although it may not be eternally manifest, but it's the same as the eternal form of the Lord. That is much higher, that is. That is much, that is. That Vishwarupa is very preliminary. Okay. Translation.
Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, O King, after hearing these words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trembling Arjuna offered obeisances with folded hands again and again. He fearfully spoke to Lord Krishna in a faltering voice as follows.
So now Arjuna's fear is gone, is not fearful because of the ghastly Kala Rupa. Now he is fearful that I have done maryada atikramana. I thought that Krishna is my friend and I have offended him so much. That's why he is fearful. And in the Bhakti Rama Sindhu, this section, these verses are quoted to show how Arjuna Sakya is not Vishramba Sakya, it is Gaurav Sakya. Vishramba Sakya is an intimate Sakya. The Sakhas, the Gopas in Vrindavan, they never offer any verse to Krishna. They make Krishna carry them also on his shoulders. Krishna's body, but they never apologize to Krishna. But Krishna is occasionally apologizing. So Gaurav Sakhya is something like Aishwarya Bhakti. And Vishwaramba Sakhya is something like Madhurya Bhakti. So Arjuna's relationship is Gaurav Sakhya, Gaurav, oh, glory, greatness. Gaurav Sakhya versus Vishwaramba Sakhya. So yes. No, in general Arjuna's relationship is more Arjuna, Sakya, but Arjuna's relationship is Gaurav Sakya, in general.
Arjuna said, O
O Master of Senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the humans are afraid and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done.
So, this is a standard Raksha Mantra. Just like we have Ram Raksha. So like that, this is a Raksha Mantra. And this is invoked in many places in the mantra literature to talk about protection from Rakshasas. So, it's saying two things. What is happening? The demons are running away and the world is joyful. Why? Because Jagat Prarishyatya, they are very happy. Prakirtya, they are glorifying you and they are very happy for glorifying you. Right? The demons are fleeing away and all this is rightly done. Because those who are devotional, they are happy to see you. Those who are inimical, they are frightened to see you. Yes, translation.
O great one, greater even than Brahma, you are the original creator. Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you? O limitless one, God of God, essence of the universe, you are the invincible soul, the cause of all causes.
So now he is going on glorifying him in different ways. From Aksharam Sadasat Param, yeah, beyond his material manifestation. Yes.
You are the original person, Godhead, the oldest unlimited
century
of this
manifested
person. You are the everything and you are all that is knowable. You are the supreme divinity of the world.
So this point we'll be discussing again in the 13th chapter. Vetasi Vidyam Cha Param Cha Dhamma. So you are the knower and you are the knowable. So that is called that. Jnanam Jeyam Jnanagamyam. That is the glorification of the Super Soul which comes over there. That time we'll discuss this in more detail. You are the knower and you are the knowable. Yeah, go ahead.
You are a spring of water, you are fire, you are water, you are the moon, you are the moon, you are the moon, you are the great grandfather. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances to you. Thousand times again, eight and nine.
So this is Pratikopasana, as we discussed earlier. Then he's taking one particular aspect of nature and that you are that being. That doesn't mean that that particular devata is God, but he's that represents his greatness, his power represents your power. And he's glorifying over there.
Yes.
Now, this is purely obeisance in verse.
You from the front, from behind, and from all sides. Oh, unbounded power, you are the master of the limitless mind. You are all pervading, and thus you are.
Nama, because you know, if the deity is in front, you will offer obeisance in front. But if the deity is everywhere, where do you offer obeisance?
So I offer obeisance from the front, from the behind, from all sides.
So, how is Krishna everything? Because he pervades everything. So, brief, one line which we can quote for Sarvam Samapnoshi Tatosi Sarvaha. How are you everything? Because you pervade everything. Nama prayer, this is a prayer. Earlier was just observation. These are clearly prayers going on. And it's interesting in the Islamic conception of God, God is not considered all pervading. They don't say God is omnipresent because their logic is that if God is omnipresent, he will be able to be present in abominable substance like stool also. And then here, that will be offense to Allah to say that he is present in stool. So they say he is not omnipresent. But you know, they consider Allah is so contaminable that you know that even soul can contaminate. Krishna exists everywhere, but it's always transcendental. So, Siddham Apap Vittam, yes. We'll discuss more about. They don't say Allah is all pervading. There is a throne of Allah, there are seven jannatas, and in the topmost jannat, there is the throne of Allah, where he resides. So they have a very peculiar logic. Allah is a person but he does not have a form.
So
we'll discuss more about that in the 17th chapter. Yeah.
taking one aspect of Godhead?
No, that means a particular devata who is very powerful, that devata is considered to be representing the power of God. And by remembering that this devata's power comes from the supreme worshipper. If one knows that this devata is only a representative and Krishna is supreme, that is the vikara upasana. Otherwise it is devata upasana.
It's a
significant, that's what I mean. Significant. Yeah, significantly different. So let's go to this verse, no? It's a nice verse. Sakheti matva prasadham yaduktam he Krishna he yadha he sakheti ajanta mahima nanta vedam maya samadhasmane vapi yachavahasa samasatkritosi nihashayasana bhojaneshu ekotavapyachyutasamaksham
Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you. O Krishna, O Yadav, O my friend, not knowing your glory, please forgive me, forgive whatever I have done, in the madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, resting as we relax, lay on the same bed, or sat or ate together, sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. O infallible one, please excuse me for all those offenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Sakheti Matva, I'm thinking of you as my friend, but I understand you are not a friend. You are a very great person. So, you see, you know, Chakravarti Pada describes that he used to Krishna Yadava Sakheti. So, he says that, you know, actually, I used to address you as Krishna pejoratively. Pejoratively means criticizingly. But actually, you are a Arharati and I am a Maharati. Why Ardharati? Because you don't have your own chariot, you are riding on my chariot. So, you need some other warrior on your chariot. Well, I am on my own. And so, that is Krishna. And Yadava. That is also sarcastic. Because you are in the Yadava dynasty, but you are not the king. You are just an ordinary prince in the Yadava dynasty. Whereas, I am directly the brother of the king. I have my own kingdom. And it's okay. And he says, my friendship is not because of any special qualification of yours, it is just because of my kindness to you that I was your friend. I am much greater than you, but I bestowed my friendship upon you. He said, I used to think like this. And because of that, I insulted you many times. So, vihara shayyasana bhojanesh, while resting, while talking, while eating, I used to jest. So please forgive me for that. Then you give very intimate examples of how you should forgive me. पिता त्रिलोकस्य चरा गुरु तत्स्वस्य अभ्यधिकल्पितोऽन्य लोकत्रयेत्र प्रतीम प्रभाव So why was I wrong? I was saying Sakheti Matva, that you are my friend. But now I understand you are not Sakha, you are Pitasi, not just Pita of me, but Pitasi Lokasya Charachara, of everyone. And then he says, no one equal to you. Or I was saying I am superior to you, but I am not even equal to you. Nobody can be equal to you. You are the highest. Apratima Prabhava, incomparable power. But now because you are so great, so please forgive me, he says. Next verse. तस्मात् प्रणम्य प्रणिधाय कायम् प्रसादये त्वामहमीशनित्यम् इत्येव पुत्रस्य सखेव सख्यु प्रियप्रियायार्हसि देव सोढु. Husband, the familiarity of his wife.
Why is it?
Okay. So you are discovering all these things. There are some sort of editing which have been done. Anyway, the point is that here, although traditionally we say that he is talking about these three higher rasas in one sense, Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhurya. And just as you know, in love, so first he said, Krishna, I don't know whether it's Maya Pramadas Pranayena Vapi, whether it is a madness or out of love. So he said, actually, I need out of love only, it is not out of madness. So out of love, this is in love, there are things that are forgiven. So you please forgive me. Your friend is okay, this is your father, your friend is sister. So there also, although the Aishwarya Bhav is there, but still the intimacy is also there. And he uses intimate example, and he says, please forgive me for this. Then, now his prayers will soon come to an end. Two more verses. And this is the translation.
After seeing this little form which I have never seen before, I am gladdened, but at the same time my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please bestow your grace upon me and reveal again your form of the personality of Godhead, O Lord of the Lords, O abode of the universe.
So he's saying two emotions are there, Rishitosmi Drishtva and Bhayena Chapravikitam Manomi. Rishita is delight, joy, but there is fear also. So by seeing the Vishwarupa there was joy, by Kalarupa there was fear. And Tadeva Darshame Deva Rupa. Therefore please show me that form. Prasid Devesh Jagannivasa. So which form does he want to see? That will be seven next verse. Yeah.
Kiritinam gadinam chakrahastam ichhām svāmarishtumaham sasaiva tenaiva rūpena caturbhujena sahasravāho bhavishvamunte.
So the four arms, as we know, they represent protection of the devotees and the weapons in their hands represent the protection of devotees and destruction of the demons. The four hands also represent the four blessings, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, Vishnu. So each of the devas can do different things, but Vishnu alone can give everything. So I long to see with that form. And now from here onwards, Krishna will start speaking. So should we stop this? Should we complete this? Okay. Tomorrow, actually, I completed a significant section. We've already gone beyond our century. We completed 122 verses today. Yeah. So you can. 46 verses you have to remove from here. So 241 verses remaining in 20 hours. So come down to 11 now. Almost like, no, 12. So, you can change that? Who do you remind you about it? Yeah. It 267, no?
247.
So let's come to the yoga ladder now. It's just an overview of what we have discussed till now. So first, you don't bother about the numbers right now. Just try to understand what is given over there. And you can write down the numbers later. And we can discuss some things if you have any questions. So here, actually I have described it from always going top down, but it's from the lowest to the upmost. So Bhakti Yoga, which is bottom, is the highest. So we start with Karma Kanda. And the hierarchical way is from Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Ashtanga Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. That is the normal hierarchical way in which things will move forward. So we will just be depicting this transition. And then we will also be depicting another transition from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, from Jnana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, from Ashtanga Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. This is also very interesting. Sorry, Bhakti Yoga is here. So basically, four levels are there. And from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and from 1 to 4, 2 to 4, 3 to 4, like that. So this is what is being depicted over here. Now Karmakanda, where is it described? Primarily the second and the third chapters. So 2.31 to 38 is, well, as you, if you want you can note it down, no problem, but this is not the screen. F5, huh? Karma Yoga greater than Karmakanda. That means Karmakanda leads to Karma Yoga. And then for Bhakti Yoga, I put much, much greater. It is the topmost. So, Bhakti Yoga is the perfection of Karmakanda. It is the perfection of Karma Yoga. It is the perfection of Jnana Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Everything. So, I will just briefly describe this as you are writing. Karmakanda is described in 2.31 to 38 is the section where Arjuna has been told, fight, either you will attain heaven, or you will attain this earth. That is the Karmakanda. 3.10 to 16 is a section where it is described that Anna Bhavanti Bhutani Parjanyadana Sambhava, that we have to perform this Pravartitam Chakra, swallow that chakra. So this is the where Karmakanda is described per se. Yes, I want to go. Okay. Now, how Karma Yoga is superior to Karma Kanda is described from 2.40 to 2.53. 2.40 starts with Neha Abhikramanashosti. And how he compares that if you go to heaven, you fall back again, but on the spiritual path, everything is eternal. And then the comparison is how Trigunya Vishaveda is Trigunya Vishaveda, go beyond the three modes. So Trigunya Vishaveda is basically Karma Kanda, go beyond that. And there is also that if you want a one verse comparison, Yavana Thaurapani, 2.46. How? When there is an ocean, when there is flowing water, river, or there is water flowing everywhere, you don't need wells. So, like that, one doesn't need Karma Kanda. You know, understand the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. That's Karma Yoga leading to Karma Kanda. Karma Yoga leading, being like, Karma Yoga being superior to Karma Kanda. Now, the practice of Karma Yoga itself, where is it given? It is given in quite a lot of sections. 3.1735, Krishna talking, is talking about how you have to set an example for the world. And there is also the comparison between the attached and the detached people. 4.924, Krishna is talking about how Nirashi with Chittatma, that section is there. Be detached and continue your work. And similarly, 5.7 to 12. So this is where Karma Yoga practice is described. Now, the Jnana Yoga sadhana is not described anywhere in this chapter. It's implied. The primary activity of Jnana Yoga is renouncing the world. And renouncing the world and focusing on speculation. So that is not specifically denoted everywhere. Anywhere. It's assumed that it is known. And Krishna is just telling Arjuna that it is not suitable for you. So Karma Yoga is better than Jnana Yoga. Not in the sense that Karma Yoga leads to a higher destination, but it is easier to practice. That is shown twice, 3.129 and 5.127. Then Dhyana Yoga Sadhana is described elaborately in the 6th chapter, 10 to 32. And then the second last verse of the sixth chapter describes tapasubhyo jnanibhyo pivatodhika karma bhajshyavi yoga. That shows how jnana yoga is higher than the other yogas. Karma yoga itself cannot lead to perfection. We discussed that. Karma yoga is initially one should announce. The karma yoga is when one is practicing karma yoga, at that time one can also do yamniya, masana, pranayama. But karma yoga alone, it does not generally lead to liberation. One has to eventually renounce, but not prematurely renounce.
When we speak here, karma yoga, this is not the one which Prabhupada is speaking about in the ocean.
No. Karma yoga is literally karma yoga. We are not talking about karma nishra bhakti yoga here. We are talking about karma yoga. So karma yoga itself can help one to advance, to become detached, and to live a detached life without becoming entangled in the material world. But eventually one has to take the highest, whether it is jnana yoga, whether it is ashtanga yoga, or whether it is bhakti yoga. So karma yoga itself generally doesn't lead to liberation.
Yeah.
Actually, practically, Bhagavad doesn't talk much about sakam karma yoga at all. That is what it is.
Offer the results to Lord.
Whom are the results offered to Nishkam Karma Yoga? If it is the Lord, then it is almost like Bhakti Yoga. But this would be Karma Nishra Bhakti. Be like Bhakti Yoga. But generally, if it is not known, Brahmanya Adhaya Karma, Sanyam Tekpa Karotiya. So, Brahmanya Adhaya, who is that Brahman to him then? Who that are offered? That can be Super Soul, that can be Brahma Jyoti, that can be Bhagavan, whatever. So, that it can be. Yes, if it is offered to Bhagavan, then it is not karma yoga at all. It is karma nishra bhakti at that
time.
Can you do this? Extended stop. I'll type something here. Everybody has finished writing this? Yes. I'll send you the hierarchy once again. Another chart I have to make. We have time to make it.
You are saying when it is offered to the Lord, it is almost like karma nishra bhakti. So, if only karma yoga, whom all the generally the results can be offered?
Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, whatever the understanding of Absolute Truth. Who do they offer the results in Nishkam Karma Yoga? A base.
So,
I'll write there, you just type it in. I'll transfer the question to
so,
I'll show right now here.
You can just show and then make the file on desktop also. So, we discussed how from Dhyan Yoga one comes to. You can write this down. You show it to them.
Yes.
You can write it down. And you can make this one more for the other chart to make things a little more clear. Maybe it's difficult to make now. This is very difficult.
I can make it here.
So, here, Parukan, I'll just explain this chart and I'll draw it. So, now we discuss. Now, Bhakti Yoga Krishna describes itself in Kevala Bhakti 7.1 and then he describes again 9 chapters. 8 chapters also describes few verses. 8.14-15-16 is Kevala Bhakti. I'll mention that here. Then, after that, how Bhakti Yoga is greater than Karma Kaha, it is greater than Karma Yoga, it is greater than Jnana Yoga, it is greater than Jnana Yoga. There are verses over there. We describe that. Have you seen this chart, the staircase and everything? No. So, Vikarma is the lowest one, on the outside the scope of religious life. And karma kanda, there is work. In karma yoga, there is work plus detachment. How do you take it? Into pronunciation. So now, after this, when one comes here, so this work component is removed. Sorry. So here, this is basically speculation. They do a lot of speculation. 1990. So now here W is removed. This is R, sorry. So D is removed from here. There's renunciation and then there is speculation. Or you could call it more positively, you can call it knowledge. The different words are used in different cases. Knowledge. Now here, as a Jira Dhanava, there is renunciation, there is knowledge, and there is meditation. And now, when one comes to Bhakti Yoga, there is renunciation, there is knowledge, there is meditation, there is devotion also. Renunciation means I am not attached. So devotion is attached to pleasing Krishna. But the addition that is there further is also. So, that means in Jnana Yoga and Dhyana Yoga, there is one important addition, that is inaction or renunciation. Renunciation of work. Now we are talking about renunciation, is more in terms of it's in terms of giving up work and cultivating knowledge. I will do one thing like this. Get over here. So, here there is, you can call it I in action. So instead of work, you act in action over here. In action over here. So now what is happening is, if you look at, you just remove these two stages, then these two components are same. So what we do in, so what Vishnu Chakrabarti describes is, this is the normal ladder. By which one will go up, the staircase of the ladder. But if one gets the grace of a devotee, then one can take a shortcut like this. Like something like an elevator or an expressway or whatever you want to call. So, conveyor belt, yeah, which can take you up fast. The conveyor belt, what is it called? Escalator. This can take one up. Because this stage of inaction is very troublesome. Because inaction is unnatural. Third chapter describes that it's very difficult for the soul to be inactive, and that is why if one can skip this stage, then now it's not just from here to here. The natural progression is if it is closer from here to here. So that inaction is skipped. Work and renunciation are there. Just add knowledge, meditation, and devotion, and it becomes natural. So, in that sense, this elevator goes from here to here, but especially the journey from here to here is easy. That's why Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, if one can go from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, that troublesome transition through Jnana Yoga and Dhyana Yoga can be avoided. Why is it troublesome? Because it involves inaction. So, in Bhakti, there is knowledge also. In Bhakti, there are cultivate knowledge of Krishna's glory. In Bhakti, there is meditation also. Because the devotee does remember Krishna and meditates on Krishna. But along with all that, there is desire. That's devotion.
Knowledge of
Jnani
and higher Vrata.
Oh, huge difference.
We discussed earlier the Supreme Temple, you remember Shushka Jnana and Bhakti Unmukha Jnana. So, the Jnana of the devotee is only about Brahman. It is a knowledge, So any questions? As this is a signal, let me show you. This is basically a diagrammatic depiction of what is taught in the Bhagavad Gita. But there is no one verse which describes the staircase. Overall, if you look at the components you are talking about, we can analyze. And this was taught to us by Purnachandra Maharaj. And this I found it much more easier to depict and understand than the yoga that is described by Guru and Guru. It is, that's also good, but this is more easy to understand because we analyze it in the components. And you can see that we can give references of how bhakti contains all these things. Bhakti contains renunciation, bhakti contains knowledge, bhakti contains meditation. We can give references for that. So in that sense we can do. No, in action. That's what the stage is chitna. We can avoid a troublesome stage of inaction and move directly upwards. Inaction is not doing any work, I'm just doing a meditation for speculation, cultivating knowledge. Both are mercy of a devotee only, like all of us, at least many of us, at least. Can you repeat your question clearly?
That is Bhakti Yoga. Like this. He explained to him. Yeah. Sorry, yeah? Yeah, karma yoga work is there. We put in action over here. It's basically like this. These are levels. Yeah, give chance, give some room. Yeah. Yeah, that's why the knowledge, the meditation, the devotion are not there yet. That is there over there. Yes. Okay. He can this example is making an interesting point. He's saying that karma yoga can have knowledge. And you can have renunciation over there. Yeah. Actually, generally speaking, Jnana and Vairagya are concomitant factors. And in Vedic culture, you talk about Jnana leads to Vairagya. So you can either put Vairagya or you can put Jnana. So you could put it more appropriately because renunciation might imply renunciation of action, renunciation of fruits of action. So, in one sense, we have work plus renounced action. That's why the renunciation, if you know, otherwise it's contrary, work and renunciation. What do you mean by work and renunciation? So it's renounced work. Work with renunciation of the fruits of action. That's what is being described over there. Yeah, from anywhere one can elevate to Bhakti Yoga if one gets the association of devotees. Yes, let me see. Yes. It can be any of them. But it's primarily selflessness in karma yoga. Disentanglement. Objective is basically I don't want to get entangled in karma. That is not known at that time. In karma yogi himself may not know what is absolute truth. His concern is this world is miserable. I don't want to get entangled in this world.
Giving
is actually a renunciation thing for a good cause of Prabhupada's use. What should we call this? Then it will become karma and Vishnu Bhakti. It is given to Krishna and Vishnu. He is asking now, if he is giving for a good cause, will he not become entangled? Yes, he can become entangled, but that entanglement is much lesser. Because the renunciation can also be in goodness, passion, and goodness. The charity can be in goodness, passion, and goodness. And charity in goodness, it does not bind. So, deshe, kale, che, patri, che. See, opening annashala is not necessarily a karmically binding activity. Opening a dhamashala, opening a annashala, annakshetra. This can be liberating if they are not done with the desire for name, fame, glory. It can be in goodness, it need not be binding. But it's very rare to do them like that, especially in Kali Yuga. The selfless karma yogi, how will he advance? If he has to advance to Jnana Yoga, eventually when he becomes qualified in terms of not just being detached from the fruits of action, but he feels that I can be inactive, and he rounds the world itself. Then there is the next stage for his advancement. Shantavar, you have to see me? Sir? Last question, please. Yeah, all Mishra Bhaktis will come before this. So, not before this. That is Bhakti Yoga here we are talking about, it's pure. But if one is doing Dhyan Yoga, one is doing Jnana Yoga, one is doing Karma Yoga, but if one understands Vishnu as the goal, then it becomes Mishra Bhakti. Right? If Bhakti is a prominent element, it will be Pradhani Bhut Bhakti. If Bhakti is not a prominent element, it's a minor element, it will be Muni Bhut Bhakti. But it will still be Bhakti. It will be Mishra Bhakti. So, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sarva Bhakti Rangati jai, Hari Om Sri Mata.